This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Last week, we began our new series covering the inner workings of the United States Congress, one of the least liked in American history, according to recent polls.
Last Wednesday, we talked about the prospects for extending the federal unemployment benefits that expired in December. We'll get an update on where those stand today. And also this week, Congress appears to have agreed on an appropriations bill that would keep the government open through September.
If the bill passes, it would be the first of its kind since 2011. We're joined now by USA Today Congress and Politics editor Paul Singer. He blogs at How Government Works and tweets from @SingerNews. Paul, welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much. How are you doing?
Great. Well, before we get to that appropriations bill, Democratic Representative Jim Moran from Virginia announced today he's not going to seek re-election. He's been in Congress a long time. He's 68. Is there anything more to this than a congressman deciding, hey, time to pack it in?
Not in the individual context, no. I think he's just into congressman packing it in. But what's interesting, if you look at the trend over the past few weeks, there's been a half dozen members in the same sort of tranche as Moran. That is, people who are more or less centrist, have been in Congress a while, and are leaving and retiring now because they just don't want to do it anymore. I am seeing this as like the hollowing out of the middle of the Congress. Many of these folks, you know, Moran's district is a Democratic district and it'll stay a Democratic district, but many of these folks are in sort of swing districts. If they were conservative Democrats, those seats are going to go to Republicans. If they were moderate Republicans, those seats are probably going to go to Democrats. But you'll just see, it's interesting to see that we've now got about a half dozen or so retirements of people who are considered long-serving, respected moderates.
Well, and that, between that and primary challenges within parties targeting relative moderates, are there going to be any moderates left, at least worthy of the term moderate, in the next few years?
I'm not sure there's much money in it. Honestly, you know, being a moderate in the U.S. Congress is kind of a lonely place to hang out. We've watched the demise of several fairly significant caucuses that were built on these sort of centrist principles. They've just sort of all drained out.
Now, you know, maybe if that keeps happening, it's going to be hard for Congress to get anything done. I know that's crazy science fiction talk, but is it going to make it even harder to find compromise?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot of upside to these guys to compromising on a lot of these issues. And so what you end up seeing is they don't pass a lot of bills. And they frequently don't work together on stuff. Now, there obviously are issues where you do see compromise. Not to make too graphic a segue, but we're moving on right now. There is an appropriations bill moving on the House floor, and it's going to pass with large bipartisan support because the alternative is so catastrophically bad that nobody wants to vote against it.
But the alternative has been catastrophically bad before, and people still voted against it. Why is it different now?
Because they were once bitten, twice shy. I mean, at this point, the Republicans were really opposed to the size of the spending bills and attempted to basically demand cuts in exchange for raising the debt ceiling back in the fall, and we got the government shutdown, and that did not work out well for them. The party really took a hit. And I think it was very, very clear from all the leadership on the Republican side they did not want that to happen again. So over Christmas, when it was announced that we've come to an agreement, bipartisan agreement, on sort of a budget deal for 2 years that just sets the levels of overall spending, at that point it was clear that the fight was going to be over. And so what they're now doing is passing a bill that nobody's read. I mean, this thing is 1,500 pages long. It was introduced 3 days ago. It's being passed now. We'll find out what's in it in a couple of weeks.
Ordinarily, when this kind of bill comes along, I would expect to see another 1,500 pages of amendments. Are we seeing any amendment process on this?
No.
None at all?
That's how they get the thing passed. That's the beauty of this thing, Rob, is if nobody reads it and no one's allowed to amend it, how can you vote no? And that's how they're handling this. They're just going to march it through. In fact, you know, the other thing to keep in mind, none of this is traditional, right? I mean, normally you would have a bill that funds the EPA and the Veterans Administration. You'd have a bill that funds the Justice Department. And there's 12 different appropriations bills, and they go through the committees and everyone. They spent 6 months doing this. This thing, they took all those bills, mashed them into one giant bill, wrote it over the past couple of months with only three people involved, and nobody's read it, and now they're passing it in 3 days.
And I've seen some commentary that, hey, in those 1,500 pages, there are a lot of little things targeting specific states, districts, and regions, what we used to call maybe pork or that kind of thing. Is that part of why some people are ready to vote for this thing without making too big a muss about it?
Yeah, I suspect. Yeah. I mean, there are what we call sweeteners. You call them pork. We call them sweeteners. I mean,
like sweet pork in a barbecue sauce.
Exactly. Part of the way they do these things is they sit down and decide what we put in this bill that's going to make it palatable to people to vote for. And everyone has to be able to go back to their district and say, hey, we did something useful. And you know, there's winners and losers. I mean, the Pentagon gets a lot of money in here. You know, Joe Biden loses because they're capping his salary and they're cutting a high-speed rail, which he was a big fan of. So, you know, I mean, there's a bunch of provisions in here for everybody to find something they will like. That's how you get people to say, well, okay, I'll close my eyes, hold my nose, and vote for it.
Speaking of closed eyes, light bulbs were one of the things I saw in this. The enforcement of the ban on the old-fashioned light bulbs.
I hate this story.
Why?
Because it's not exactly what it says it is.
I mean, okay.
There are new energy efficiency rules that the Energy Department has put into effect, by the way, which were required by law some years ago. And it's energy efficiency for a whole bunch of stuff, including light bulbs. Well, the light bulb ones, the way to meet the new standards is with a compact fluorescent bulb. It's not the only way to meet the standards. I mean, in theory, you could invent an incandescent bulb that would meet the standard, but no one's really thought they're going to. And the industry's not going that way anyway. The industry is building these things, these, you know, LED bulbs and other sort of high-tech bulbs anyhow. So what this does is removes enforcement of the rules. That is, removes funding for the enforcement of the rules. Okay, well, and keep in mind, we haven't banned, there's no ban on incandescent bulbs anyway, and they're also, the efficiency rules exempt stuff like appliance bulbs, your refrigerator bulb, things like that. So it's much more subtle than the way it is described. The way it is described is the army is going to come march over to your house and unscrew all your light bulbs and leave you in the dark. And it's just not true. But, yeah, it's hard to, you know, the details. People get tired of the details.
Well, here's another one that's been in the news a lot, and people are kind of cherry-picking details, it seems like. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates's memoir, Duty, came out. People have, depending on which side you're on, picked out criticisms of the Obama administration, praise of it, same with the Bush administration. What did he have to say about Congress, though?
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is that he had nice and bad things to say about everybody except Congress. And Congress, he said, basically, these people are horrible. Yeah, I mean, there's a line in there, I don't have it in front of me, but it was something along the lines of, you know, sitting in front of Congress at a hearing, I wanted to get up out of my chair and throw up. You know, how could I be treated this way by these people who are stupid, self-serving, disinterested in the public good, preening, uninformed? I mean, he just, like, goes on and on and on. It is clear he viewed the U.S. Congress as just a pool of swine, and he didn't understand why he had to spend so much time dealing with these people who really didn't care about anything except scoring political points. It's a fairly remarkable blast.
Is that, do you think there's something to what he's saying, or is this just maybe any cabinet official who has to endure a congressional subcommittee hearing every couple of weeks or however often is going to feel a natural resentment there?
I think there's some of that. But I mean, I also think that obviously, you know, when we talk about this around the water cooler, that because the tone of Congress has changed so much and because there's so much less interest in legislating and more interest in scoring political points, I think you might see Gates's criticism as more a sign of the times and than it was, you know, 10 years ago. 10 years ago, I suspect what somebody like that would have said, or maybe 20 years ago would have said, is, man, those guys are a nuisance, but they're sometimes doing good work. Now, this guy is saying, they're all stupid. I can't stand them.
Wow. Well, here's some more news about Congress before we let you go. OpenSecrets.org published a study over the last week saying that for the first time in its history, the majority of Congress are millionaires. Money in politics isn't a new issue. Is this a surprising new bit of news?
No. And it's not a surprising bit of news. In fact, I'll tell you, it also understates the case. Those estimates are based on the financial disclosure forms that members of Congress file, which allow them to leave out vast amounts of assets, leave out or understate vast amounts of assets. So my suspicion is that if you had true assets reported in these things, you'd find that number closer to two-thirds to three-quarters of Congress are millionaires. If you include stuff like, well, they own a house, right? That adds up already. You know, the fact of the matter is that if you are not a wealthy person, it's going to be hard for you to take, 6 months off to run for Congress and ask people to donate money and go to all the events and shake hands. And both parties are trying to recruit rich people to run for Congress because it's easier to fund your campaign by yourself rather than asking people for money.
Right. That's a dream candidate. You can pay for your own campaign. We can put our money somewhere else.
Yeah, we call them self-funders. I mean, that's the whole point. You know, people still raise money because that's how you show support, right? You want to be able to show that people do support you. But yeah, having a lot of leisure time and a lot of money at your disposal makes it a lot easier to run for Congress, particularly in the modern era. So no, I'm not surprised at all to see, you know, the lion's share of Congress. They're wealthy people. I mean, they just are wealthy people. They're the only people who can afford to keep two houses, right? You got to go back and forth between Washington and your district. It's just not, by and large, it is not a job for somebody who doesn't have money.
We'll leave it there. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot. Good talking to you, Rob.
That's Paul Singer. He's politics and Congress editor at USA Today. He joins us each Wednesday at this time.